Concerning the Shroud of Turin, obviously John in the Bible describes the burial cloths as strips, and that the head cloth was sitting aside from the cloth that was wrapped around Jesus' body. Why, and so, you know, our opinion obviously would be that the Shroud of Turin is not what they claim it to be. But we were curious if you, knowing so much about, you know, Jewish traditions and things like that, had any other insight into this as to why people still seem to think this thing is what they claim it to be.
Good question, Terry. Well, first of all, my opinion is the Shroud of Turin, or Turin, or however they say it, do I really think that it's what they say it is? Absolutely not. I mean, I'm trying to save, you know, baby clothes from our kids and their moths are getting at them. Can you imagine something that had blood and sweat and all of those resins on it from 2,000 years ago to be perfectly preserved? But think about this, more than that. God, remember I just mentioned that Nehushtan thing? God did not want, that's the serpent on the pole from, you know, that was lifted up in the book of Numbers. God did not want them to have that. And when the revival came, he had Hezekiah destroy that thing. So God is not into icons and relics. That's the first thing I think about the Shroud. The second thing I think about is when God knew Moses' body would have been the ultimate relic. Can you imagine? I mean, we have, who is it over in Russia that we have? Is it Stalin or Lenin or both? I don't know who. And they're trying to do Hugo Chavez in a permanent form, its body at least. Can you imagine what, if they would have mummified, because remember, those Jews just came out of Egypt. They knew all this stuff from being in the secrets of the Egyptians. But can you imagine the prize it would have been to have Moses' body? And so think about this. Would God want the ultimate relic? Do you understand what the Shroud is? It's supposed to be a reverse. In fact, there's all kinds. I get the Biblical Archaeological Society Review magazine, probably many of you do, and they've done the x-rays and everything on it, and they say it's like a photographic negative. It's not like someone painted it on. It's like it was a negative that you could make a photograph from. And what that has done is it's stirred up the same level of relic worship. You remember what Martin Luther was working with during the Reformation? The castle at Wittenberg was filled with relics. And by a relic, I mean a tooth of John the Baptist, a bone from Stephen that was martyred. They had exactly they actually had a container filled with milk from the Virgin Mary that she nursed Jesus Christ from. They had that there. They actually had John the Baptist's right index finger, the one he pointed at Jesus when he said, "Thou art the Lamb of God." Those are called relics. And what they did to people is people began to worship them. So to your question, if you want my opinion on the Shroud, absolutely not. I mean, absolutely not. I mean, it's impossible to think that could have survived. For this reason, did you know, we don't even know exactly where Jesus was buried. Now we've got Gordon's Calvary, we've got the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Do you know why we don't know where Jesus was buried? Nobody revered it. You understand, if you took your child to the emergency room on a trip somewhere and they had been riding a bike in the campground, run over by a car, and you went to the emergency room and they patched him up and they walked out of there, would you go back every year to the emergency room? No, you got your child back. Now, maybe if they died in the accident, you'd go back and, you know, somberly think of the emergency room where they died and you would meditate on it and thank the Lord for his mercy. If they came out of the emergency room, do you even remember all the places you've taken your children over the years? You understand what I mean? They did not, the early church did not revere the burial place of Christ. They did not go back to it enough in the first century for us to even be sure where it was. So do you think that they would revere a bloody rag when they had Christ? You understand what I mean? I mean, see, to understand where the shroud comes from, the shroud is part of medieval Romanism. This idea, Romanism is, and with this new pope, I mean, he's touching. He's touching to me. I mean, how many popes are humble or appear to be? How many popes kiss Muslim prisoner incarcerated women's feet, washing them and weeping over them? Not very many. But it doesn't matter what he's doing, it's what he believes. And the Shroud of Turin is a product of Romanism. And Romanism seeks at every level to materialize the spiritual. The Mass is to materialize. What do I mean by materialize? It's kind of like these new 3D printers, you know? You can have an idea and you can make it. And it's no longer immaterial. Materialize the spiritual. So what you do is, in Romanism, God says, for by grace are you saved through faith, and we are justified freely by his grace. And you get all these spiritual terms. And so what they do is they materialize it, and they say that the grace is infused by the wafer, you know, the host, you know, they hold it up and pray, and then they dip it and put it on your tongue. That's materializing spiritual things. That's what Romanism does. And so what they had to do during the Middle Ages, I mean, you know, when I'm listening to Dwight talk about the darkness in Romania, and they follow the Eastern Church schedule. The only thing the Eastern Church did 1,000 years ago is they allowed their priests to get married, and they made their three-dimensional idols two-dimensional. They're reliefs. They're not full or round idols. But it's still the Romanism materializing the spiritual. And so when you get this shroud, it's people feeling that some cloth would carry some spiritual power. God hates the adoration of things rather than of him. That's what idolatry is all about. God resisted, so with the brazen serpent, the serpent on the pole was supposed to be an illustration of salvation. It wasn't supposed to be a means to salvation. It was an illustration that if you obeyed God, do you remember Jesus uses it? For as the serpent was lifted up, that's what this thing was. It was a serpent lifted up. And Jesus said in John 3, as the serpent was lifted up in the wilderness, even so the Son of Man must be lifted up, that whoever believed on that serpent in the wilderness was saved, and so if you believe on me, you'll be saved. It wasn't that we're supposed to worship the cross. And so what else do they have in Wittenberg? They actually had a piece of the cross, and not just one. In fact, in Martin Luther's time, he cataloged it. That's why he got in so much trouble on Reformation Day when he did his theses. Did you know he calculated they had enough pieces of the cross to build a small structure, like a house? He cataloged all of the pieces in all of the church of the Roman Catholic churches of the cross. I mean, some of them have a piece this big. Some of them have, actually, they have like 2/3 of the arm piece. And he added up all of those, and he said you could actually build a small building. So they're not all pieces of the cross. It's this materializing the spiritual. So God says, don't associate material things with salvation, that you're going to get some kind of a spiritual benefit out of an object. Definitely don't, you know, try and preserve the body. And that's what the shroud is. The shroud is supposedly an exact, almost like a 3D deal, of Christ. And it's very revered by man, not God. And finally, would God allow what they say, if you read the physics of this, they say that it was a almost radioactive, explosive energy burst that put a reverse image, kind of like in a photograph, onto that cloth in such a power burst that it imprinted it in a three-dimensional way within the fabric of this shroud. Do you think the God of the universe who knows all things, would even want that. So if there really is any power in the shroud, it's probably going to be used by the devil. You understand that? This new pope, that, and I don't want to criticize him, but in his opening statements, he prays to Mary, he invokes Joseph, and he doesn't mention Jesus Christ. Interesting. He's a Jesuit. Jesuits are the most Catholic of the Catholics. That means if anybody believes Romanism's doctrine of infused grace, he does. And so we have to be cautious to measure what someone says against what their doctrine is. So, but even if the shroud, by some stretch of the imagination, could be something someone grabbed from the tomb, like some relative of Peter's, you know, that wasn't really theologically astute, and they thought, man, even though Jesus went to heaven, I want a little something to remember him by. Even if that happened, God would never want any believer to revere that. You know, it horrified me. I was at a pastor's conference once of someone very famous in Chicago that has the largest church there, the size of a mall. And he said that that when he prays, he likes to put objects. He gets on his knees and he likes to put an object. Now, this was 10 years ago. He probably doesn't do it anymore. But he puts an object there. Like he says, he puts a crown of thorns or he puts a picture of Jesus. And he said it really helps him to pray better. God says in John 4 that God is a spirit, and those that worship him do not worship him with icons and relics and images and holy hardware and pictures of Jesus. That we don't even have a physical description of what Jesus looks like other than Revelation 1. Nothing. We don't know what color his hair was, how big his nose was. You understand what I mean? If God was into worshiping images, he would have given us a lot more. He's not. God wants us to worship in spirit and in truth. And the truth is, what his word has said, and the spirit is, that it's not physically bound. We have to be careful. I remember when I pastored many years ago in New England, I came for my... I don't know how I missed this, but I came from my candidating Sunday, and I came up to the pulpit, and this was a historic 165-year-old church, and I went like this. I had never seen it before. There was a 30-foot-high picture of Christ kneeling in the garden. It was just, it was probably a Michelangelo or something. It was a very wealthy church, and I thought, where did that come from? And they said, oh, that's been here for 150 years. It's an aid to our worship. And I said, how is it an aid to your worship? And they said, well, when the sermon's boring, they can at least look at Jesus, you know? And some of you, it's been a long Easter dinner thing. But what they were saying is it helped them focus on Christ. They had this gargantuan 25-foot and high and 10-foot-wide picture of Jesus, and the people actually would come over during the week, and people would actually sit in the pews and just gaze at that. And they wanted organ music playing, and they kind of meditated and prayed. Did you know that is not a positive thing? And so, back to the shroud. I don't know if I've said enough, but no, I don't think it's real. Did I say it, Terry, enough times?
Absolutely, wonderfully.
But it is the laws of physics and everything else. There's something funny going on there that either someone made kind of a... what was the guy that used to write backwards? Leonardo. You know, Leonardo, who was a genius... I could see someone of his caliber figuring out how to do something backward and do a flash and all that. But I don't think God did it.